This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees at 7:35. The Harvard School of Public Health, together with Syracuse University, just released a study of potential air quality benefits based on the first-of-their-kind carbon dioxide emissions reduction proposal by the Environmental Protection Agency. Glennis Board reports.
When President Obama announced a year ago that there would be a program to reduce carbon emissions from power plants, Charles Driscoll, professor at Syracuse University, started compiling several different policy options that the EPA would likely pursue. From there, he worked to predict how such policies would compare, considering co-benefits of reductions in power plant emissions.
The overall objective is to reduce carbon emissions from power plants, but associated with fossil fuel emissions, there are other air pollutants that are released, such as sulfur dioxide and particulate matter and nitrogen oxide, which contributes to ozone. And then some of these pollutants not only have health effects, but also have effects on ecosystems.
In a 2014 report released by the American Lung Association, data indicates that while air pollution in West Virginia's metropolitan areas has generally improved, there's more ozone, or smog, in every county where it was measured. The West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection corroborates that, indicating that especially in northern counties like Marshall and Brooke, sulfur dioxide continues to be a problem because of proximity to power plants and other large industrial sources. Health risks associated with air pollution include not only respiratory problems, but also cardiovascular, neurological, and developmental, just to name a few. Driscoll's report has mapped out how much and where pollution levels are most likely to improve.
And so depending on how the policy is implemented, there could be substantial benefits for air quality. And certainly West Virginia falls into that category. There would be large benefits for West Virginia.
In fact, looking at Driscoll's maps, every state in the lower 48 states would receive benefits. But the greatest benefits occur in the eastern U.S., particularly in the states in and around the Ohio River Valley, including West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Maryland, for decreases in both fine particulate pollution and the largest average decreases in sulfur and nitrogen pollution. The same researchers are also planning to release a subsequent report later this summer that aims to quantify specific health benefits as well as associated cost savings. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glennis Board in Morgantown.
West Virginia University's Center for Energy and Sustainable Development is working with Downstream Strategies on a new report analyzing how West Virginia can best meet these new EPA proposals on carbon dioxide emissions. As Beneduccio reports, this study will be used to advise policymakers as they draft strategies to submit to the EPA.
This report will be completed over the course of the next year. The State Department of Environmental Protection has 2 years to submit a plan to EPA which will present its proposals for cutting state carbon dioxide emissions from power plants. It won't be easy as the majority of the state's energy production comes from coal. The EPA wants to cut carbon emissions by 30% over the next 16 years from 2005 carbon levels. Evan Hansen with Downstream Strategies says West Virginia's levels need to decrease about 20% according to EPA proposals.
What's important to realize is that a 20% reduction in carbon dioxide emissions doesn't necessarily mean that we'd be mining 20% less coal or that we would lose 20% of our coal jobs. There's so much flexibility built into this rule that it can be achieved in many different ways, and coal production is going to continue in West Virginia even after these rules are implemented. For example, electricity generation can shift toward natural gas or toward renewable energy systems, or there are provisions to increase energy efficiency at homes and businesses, and that counts toward the carbon dioxide reductions.
Hansen's organization, Downstream Strategies, along with the West Virginia University Center for Energy and Sustainable Development, is compiling information in a report to give to state policymakers like the DEP on how West Virginia can meet these EPA proposals. This includes looking at emissions data from all of the state's coal-fired power plants, as well as researching what rules and regulations on the books might be helpful or obstructive to getting these emission cuts done. James Van Nostrand works for the Center for Energy and Sustainable Development at WVU.
I think the studies that are out there indicate that energy efficiency is probably the lowest cost compliance option, and we currently have a pretty poor record on energy efficiency. There's been utilities offering programs to help customers control their energy bills, whether they be in residential customers, commercial customers, or industrial customers, but it's basically paying customers for saving the kilowatt hours that then don't have to be generated by generating plants.
The EPA's newly proposed regulations are the first enforcement standards ever set on carbon emissions. When they were announced, West Virginia's leaders viewed them with caution, anxiety, and trepidation. Most were extremely disappointed. Van Nostrand says some other states, including coal states like Kentucky, have already begun to develop strategies to cut carbon emissions. Van Nostrand says West Virginia is not as far ahead as it probably should be.
I don't think we've positioned ourselves very well thus far to achieve compliance with these rules. A lot of states have moved forward much more aggressively with respect to integrating renewable energy in their portfolios, with respect to diversifying their energy supply for electric generation, to include a mix of coal, natural gas, and renewables and nuclear, with respect to integration of energy efficiency. So we're behind a lot of the country in terms of the extent of integrating renewable energy.
Nationally, carbon emissions and how to deal with them have become a politically charged issue. Democrats and Republicans alike struck down a cap-and-trade proposal in the United States Congress about 5 years ago, when funding was also on the table for new clean coal technology practices like carbon capture and storage. Van Nostrand says the lack of congressional collaboration forced the hand of President Obama to direct the EPA's movement on carbon emission regulation.
The president is using basically his executive authority through the EPA to regulate greenhouse gases under the Clean Air Act, and it's not a very elegant approach, and frankly, it's kind of a blunt instrument. It's not the best way to do it, but in the absence of Congress coming up with some kind of a federal program, it's not an ideal solution, but it's the only one the president has available to him.
The EPA has scheduled four public meetings to discuss these proposals. They are planned for the last week of July in Pittsburgh, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, and Denver. The report will be done by next June. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ben Aduccio in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:43. Some patchy fog this morning, partly to mostly cloudy skies today with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. Temperatures in the 70s and 80s, a chance of rain and thunderstorms tonight with lows in the 50s and 60s. And rain continues on Tuesday with temperatures remaining in the 70s and 80s.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by thousands of West Virginia artists at Tamarack. The Best of West Virginia in Beckley, where everything is Mountain State made. Facebook.com/TamarackWV.
Theater often has been a means to convey a particular message. Since ancient times, it's been used to teach lessons, understand important events, tell stories, and provide entertainment. And one company comes to Charleston this summer to start a dialogue about water. Liz McCormick explains.
On January 9th, 2014, an estimated 10,000 gallons of MCHM, a chemical used to clean coal, spilled into West Virginia's Elk River. The result was catastrophic, leaving 300,000 West Virginians in the Kanawha Valley with unusable tap water. Coincidentally, that same day in Brooklyn, New York, the New Brooklyn Theater, a company whose mission is to perform theater wherever theater is uniquely needed to move forward public conversations, opened a production of Edward Albee's The Death of Bessie Smith inside the Interfaith Medical Center in Bed-Stuy when it was threatened with closure. The company was founded 3 years ago by artistic director Jonathan Solari, and he was already thinking about what the company might perform next as news of West Virginia's water crisis reached him.
Immediately, I was bombarded with emails from activists in New York who were from West Virginia, tweets and all sorts of things, photos of the brown water in the bathtubs, and I was just thinking, what is going on? So we did a little bit more research as information became available or information did not become available, and started speaking with people who were either from Charleston, from West Virginia, and started getting a sense of it.
Solari and the rest of the New Brooklyn Theater chose Henrik Ibsen's An Enemy of the People, hoping it would address the water crisis and act as a platform for the citizens of Charleston to speak out about what's been happening. As part of their motto, the New Brooklyn Theater likes to perform in unusual spaces. And for this piece, they will be building a site-specific stage on the Kanawha River at the public access dock in Porter's Hollow in Charleston.
We're doing a new adaptation that we're creating ourselves with our playwright, Jeff Strabone, who's also on the board of directors of our theater company. So now we're trying to ground this great story in West Virginia and in a way that speaks directly to our audience and to this situation. We're performing on an extension that we're building up to the public access dock next to the Frontier building. So boats are going to be going by, and we're not going to be able to stop that, and that's just going to be part of our storytelling. We have to embrace all of that.
An Enemy of the People deals with a man named Dr. Stockman, who's been seeing symptoms in the town that have caused him concern. Thinking it could be the water at the local baths that is the basis of the local economy, he runs a test, finding out that the water is being polluted and has been for the last 10 years.
So the play is about his fight to try to bring that truth to the forefront. The way into the story is through a similar situation that we've been experiencing here since January. But at the heart of it, it's a play about a man who has to discover and come to terms with how difficult it is to do the right thing. But we do that through the lens of polluted water.
To help make their performances come to life, the New Brooklyn Theater casts local actors of the area in which they perform to give the story a more genuine feeling by having actors who have witnessed the issues firsthand.
It's been eye-opening. You know, there's only so much that we could do in terms of pre-production when we're reading newspaper articles and listening to the radio, but to be on the ground firsthand, to be able to collaborate with people that live through it and continue to live through it and have those voices in the room as part of the collaborative process, that's priceless to us.
The key to the New Brooklyn Theater's mission is creating a dialogue about current issues. And Solari says if they're not trying to actually engage with their audience and directly addressing their concerns, then they're not doing their job.
When the play's over, it's not just where are we going to eat right now, but actually something that you can carry with you and will hopefully empower our audience to take ownership for the decisions that are made that affect them and to facilitate that conversation.
An Enemy of the People will open on June 12th. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Liz McCormick in Charleston.
And you can find out more about the New Brooklyn Theater and its performances here on our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.